This is TalkBack, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. KGVO, Missoula's news and weather station.
Hey, good morning, everyone, and welcome. It's the Tuesday, April 7th edition of TalkBack. TalkBack this morning is brought to you by our friends at Y West Storage, secure flexible self-storage in Missoula. To reserve your unit today, call Y West at 510-0590. All these, obviously, 406 numbers. Quality Seamless Gutters of Montana, expert gutter installation and repair. For a free quote, call 728-4002. Bruckner's Truck and Equipment, heavy-duty truck sales, parts and service. Bruckner's number, 541-9097. Busy Bees Cleaning Service, commercial cleaning you can always trust. Call Busy Bees at 550-3219 and get a free estimate. Pivots Plus is Montana's leader in irrigation, parts, service, and sales. So call Pivots Plus, 683-4418. And by Gomer's Diesel. Diesel repair, parts and service in Missoula. Call Gomer's Diesel, 728-7620 today.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
Well, good morning, everyone. Good to have you along this morning. It is this Tuesday, April 7th. I'm Peter Christian. Mr. Nick Christensen right over there across the way. Good morning, Mr. Nick.
Good morning.
Well, we got a lot to talk about today because it looks like war is brewing over in Iran. And, I shouldn't say it's providential that Michael and Mirdad are going to be with us at 9 o'clock this morning. Is that right?
8:30.
All right. That's even better. Dr. Mirdad Kia, Professor Mirdad Kia and Michael Mayer, University of Montana Professor Emeritus will be with us in about a half an hour to talk about what's going on in the world. And of course, you will have the opportunity to weigh in as well. But from now until then, it is open phone. So if there's something you want to talk about, something going on, now we already have a caller on the line. So let's jump right in and get Steve on the line. Steve, good morning. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Peter. Good morning. How are you?
Good, sir.
Good. Hey, I have a quick question for you. When you were at church on Sunday, which I know you were, being the valued man that you are, I just was curious, was the pastor there at your church talking about annihilation of another group of people or destruction of a history of a people or advocating for violence on Easter or a couple days? I'm curious if he was doing that, number one. That's my first question to you. And number two is a comment, and then I'll drop and listen to your question or your answer off air. But I'm just so disappointed in the choice that we made to elect this guy. I was disappointed yesterday to hear one of my absolute favorite guests that you had on yesterday, Mr. Nadelson, talk about his advocacy still for Trump. I'd love to hear people, Peter, in this community that are, I don't know, 50 years or younger, maybe who served in the military during the Iraq conflict or Afghanistan conflict, call in and talk about whether or not they approve of this absurd violence that is being perpetrated on people probably just like us who want to go to church whenever they go or, you know, pray whenever they want and celebrate with their grandkids just like you do, Peter. And, you know, I just have to say I've defended Trump on the America First policies, and I really wished he would have stuck to that this term. I think it's why most of us voted for him. We all feel like our lives could be bettered and the government is spending too much time and resource on other things other than bettering the lives of its citizens. But I think, again, just this morning, he's demonstrated what a horrible person he is. I mean, just the bottom line, like, you'd never have the guy over to your Easter dinner, I'm sure, right, Peter?
So of course
anyway,
I would. I would have you over, too. I mean, the whole idea of Easter is forgiveness and restoration and resurrection and joy,
sure.
Right? It's not a time for partisan dart throwing, in my opinion.
100%. I agree. But would you like it if you talked about annihilation of people at your dinner table?
That would not be an appropriate topic at our dinner table. No, sir.
Right, and would you want you have a granddaughter, I think?
A grandson.
Right?
Almost two
grandson,
years old.
I apologize.
Yeah.
I apologize, sir. That's awesome. And we've all been keeping track. Would you want your son? Would you want your grandson to grow up to emulate the behavior of this individual, where he's disparaging of people, threatens violence, is obviously not Christian in any kind of way? Would you want that for your grandson to grow up like and be like Trump?
I will tell you, I would like my son to grow up to be the image that his parents and grandparents would try to imprint on him. I would want him to be a Christian young man, a God-fearing young man. I do not know President Trump. I know that he has spoken of his Christian faith, and of course, being a flawed human being like all of us, we have to take that in stride.
100%. Well, I appreciate the feedback, Peter. I guess I know where you stand as well. I think it's a sad day for America when we have a leader, supposed leader, in title only, saying the things that he's saying right now. It's an absolute shame. It's abhorrent that he did it, especially on Easter. And I think if more individuals who once supported him stood up and said, this is not okay to behave this way, we might be able to make some change happen.
Well, a change will happen. A change will happen in 2028. His term will be up, and you'll be able to elect another president.
Well, sure. And a change will happen much before that in 2026 when we elect, a Congress full of Democrats, of course.
Okay,
right?
We'll see.
It's more, he's in touch with public opinion. And I think the younger generation, Peter, is absolutely disgusted by his behavior. I know they are. I talk to them all the time, especially vets. And they are absolutely disgusted at this sleazeball's behavior. It's so un-American. It doesn't represent the values of our country. And I'm ashamed to say, frankly, based on what I'm seeing right now, that I voted for him. I did vote for protection of our borders. I did vote for bettering our population. But he's shown, as this is clear, he's easily influenced by other people that don't have our best interests in mind. And he's just intent on being a jerk. I mean, there's no other way to say it, And you know what's going to happen tonight, Peter. He's not going to do any of the things he says. He's going to declare some unbelievable victory for himself, right? And so I know I've taken up a lot of your time, Peter. I apologize. I know you want to get to other callers. But it's just so sad to see that this is the person who is leading our country right now. I think it's just absolutely apparent and disgusting. I have to agree unfortunately, with folks like Harry and Dave on these kinds of things. It's just disgusting. And I'm sure Skip and Jeff and everyone will call in support of this maniacal leader who's never served a day in his life in the military, never done anything really of true service, and is yet so willing to use disgusting language to threaten the lives of other people. It's really very sad for our country. And it demonstrates that we don't have leadership, and it might be the end of a period in history for us.
All right. Thank you for the call, sir. We appreciate it. We're way past the break. We're going to come right back. Nancy, Charlie, and Jeff are all standing by. It's open phones until 8:30, and then it'll be Global Hotspots with Professor Mehrdad Kia and Professor Michael Mayer joining us here in the studio with Michael, and I think Mehrdad will be on the phone. Looking forward to that coming up as well.
Dennis Bragg with your updated Town Square weather. Mostly sunny Tuesday, a high near 60. It will be breezy as we have a cold front pushing through with west winds up to about 25 miles per hour. You could see some gusts up to about 35 in the valleys, as high as 40 to 50 miles per hour on some of the ridge lines. Mostly clear on Tuesday night with lows dipping down to freezing as those west winds ease up after midnight. Wednesday looks bright and sunny with a high near 60. Then a sunny stretch, 62 Thursday, warming up to 69 by Friday.
Hey, we're back on TalkBack. 721-1290 is our number. Phone lines, well, we have several phone lines full, so let's jump right back in for open phones with Nancy. Nancy, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, morning, Glory. And I can understand the previous caller, but, oh, my God, what a time in world history. We've got the astronauts returning now to Earth from Moon, a flight for humanity, and I heard today that quantum computer is going to be used by a company to make new and better batteries, and so we are making advancements technologically, and I'm telling you, it's this war, and yes, I'm supporting President Trump, and I know we are winning. There's a lot of propaganda out there, especially from CNN and other MSNBC and New York Times and Post. It is terrible, and these are not church-going people in Iran that we are killing. We are killing the Hamas and the Islamic who are buried underground now. We heard this from Dr. Kia just before Easter when he was on your show. And these are the same people that torture the Iranian people using electric drills and other hideous, terrible methods. And, of course, the same people who attacked Israel October the 7th, 2023. And I'm not going into detail on what they did to the Israelite because we've all heard it already. And they have to be stopped. And they've had options to get along. They don't want to do it. They don't want to get along with the Western world. They have sent sleeper cells here by the thousands to destroy the country, our country from within, and to murder our children and grandchildren and ourselves. So we have to defend ourselves. I don't know why mankind is like this. I'm not going to question it. So I am in support of what President Trump is doing.
Nancy, thanks for the call. As always, we appreciate it. Charlie's up next. Charlie, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please, sir.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hey, after Harry's comment, I got a call him out on it. He said that about the Robert Mueller thing after he died, and he said Trump said something to the effect of, "Good, I'm glad he's dead. He can no longer hurt innocent people." What he actually posted, I don't know if it was on X or his Truth Social, but this is what he said or wrote. "I am saddened to learn of the passing of Robert Mueller. While he had political differences, and indeed his Russia collusion investigation caused a deep rift in the country, there can be no denying the gravity of the position he held. He was a Marine, a leader of the FBI, a man who dedicated his life to public service. In moments like this, we set aside our partisan disputes to recognize a commitment to our nation. Melania and I send our deepest condolences to his family. We pray for peace, comfort for them during this difficult time." That's what he posted. And I'm pretty sure Harry's probably going to get on here and try to sling some mud, but that's what he posted. Not the propaganda that Harry is spewing. And
well, Harry hasn't been on there yet this morning, so.
Oh, well, that's good. We'll get it. He can rebut this.
Okay.
This information. All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks for the call. All right, with that, we're up against another break. Jeff is standing by. Jeff, we appreciate your patience. We'll take a quick time out, and in about 10 minutes, we'll have Michael and Mirdad joining us for Global Hotspots. Lots to talk about there. So we'll be looking for your phone calls during that time period as well. We'll be right back.
Spring. Blowing out your birthday candles should be easy. But if you have undiagnosed COPD, you may find yourself short of breath. Early diagnosis and treatment can add years to your life. If you have symptoms like wheezing or chronic cough, talk to your doctor and visit copdfoundation.org today.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished. And with your help, together we can end hunger. Join the movement at feedingamerica.org/act now. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
We are back. This is TalkBack. It's open phones for another few minutes. And let's get Jeff on. Thanks for holding, Jeff. What's on your mind, please, sir?
Hey, good morning, Peter. Good morning, Nick. Good morning, Montana. And happy Beer Day. I don't know if you knew it or not.
There's a day for everything, right?
On this day in 1933, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt allowed the brewing and sale of 3.2 beer.
Right.
So if you are a beer drinker tonight, raise a mug. Drink responsibly, but raise a mug and celebrate National Beer Day.
National Beer Day. All right. At first, I thought you said National Beard Day, and I'm going, wow, that's interesting, because Michael just walked in. He's got a great beard. I'm sorry.
No, beer as in B-E-E-R.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Sorry.
I have some questions for Michael and Mirdad later, but I came across this tweet from the Daily Mail, and this just shows the mindset on some people's sides. And the tweet was, Trump's daring extraction of U.S. airmen trapped in Iran almost failed. Now, doesn't almost failed mean it succeeded?
Yes.
Okay. So what does it tell you about the framing, the mindset of somebody who frames it? Well, they almost failed. Well, okay. Thank you for acknowledging we succeeded. You know, it's just... I guess where you stand depends on where you sit.
I guess that's what will be termed a backhanded compliment.
I think it's trying to find defeat in the jaws of victory.
There you go.
And I will have a call in again later with a question. So.
Sounds
thanks
good.
A lot.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Day.
You the same to you. Thanks for so much. And I believe we have Dave standing by. Dave, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead. It's open phones.
Yeah, first about Robert Mueller. Donald Trump, shortly after Robert Mueller's death, posted on Truth Social, and I'm going to quote, Good, I am glad he is dead. He can no longer hurt innocent people. That was the quote off Truth Social. Maybe later the people around him decided to help him, quote, say some more nice things about Mueller, but that was his initial reaction after Mueller's death. And as far as Trump goes, you know, I'll tell you a story. My stepfather befriended me when my mother got married to him. He took me hunting and fishing, and we became friends. But not too long after I departed the house, I found out he was a sexual predator. And after he died, I refused to go to the funeral. And I said, no way would I commemorate his death. And as far as presidents go, I would never vote for a sexual predator as a president. And I'm sticking to that issue.
Well, Dave, I'm really sorry you had to go through that, sir, and your family as well.
Right. It's sad that it happens, but you know, Bill Clinton, Donald Trump, in my view, were sexual predators, and I would never vote for them.
All right. Well, I bring this up all the time. He's in his final term. He can't run again. So when that's over, you can raise a beer and celebrate and to whoever the next president is going to be. So. All right. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. All right. Let's go ahead and take our break right now. When we come back, we have Global Hotspots waiting. Michael Mayer here in the studio, Professor Michael Mayer, Professor Mirdad Kia on the phone with us from the University of Montana. And, of course, we'll be taking your phone calls as well. I don't know where they're going to take us on this Global Hotspots, but we'll find out when we come back right after this quick timeout.
As the Montana.
Dennis Bragg with your updated Town Square weather. Mostly sunny Tuesday, a high near 60. It will be breezy as we have a cold front pushing through with west winds up to about 25 miles per hour. You could see some gusts up to about 35 in the valleys, as high as 40 to 50 miles per hour on some of the ridge lines. Mostly clear on Tuesday night with lows dipping down to freezing as those west winds ease up after midnight. Wednesday looks bright and sunny with a high near 60. Then a sunny stretch, 62 Thursday, warming up to 69 by Friday.
Hey, welcome back to Talk Back. 721-1290 is our number, 1-800-568-5309. Global Hotspots underway right now. Joining us here in the studio, Dr. Michael Mayer, U of M History Professor Emeritus, and Professor Mirdad Kia, University of Montana History Professor, joining us on the phone. So, gentlemen, it's Global Hotspots, so take it away. Let's set the table for us.
Go ahead, Mirdad.
Mirdad, please.
Yep. Well, good morning, to you, Peter, and Nick, and Mike as well. Very happy to be with all of you and your listeners. It's a solemn day in some ways because we have a conflict which is becoming even more serious and destructive than it has been for the last month or so. And I'm sure we will have callers and they have questions. I apologize for my voice because I've hardly slept basically the last several nights, and I'm somehow, some way, amazingly enough, I'm still in contact with Iran, and though a lot of technology and internet has been shut down by the government, we still managed to, they still managed to contact, and what I'm hearing is pretty devastating, and we can share some of the sentiments I have heard, but I'm sure our callers have different take.
Well,
those who support it and those who don't, but that's why we are here.
Well, I would deeply appreciate it, both you gentlemen. We have about 8 minutes before we have to take a commercial break. I wanted to give you a chance to set the table and talk about various things, and then we already have several folks waiting on the phone. So if you would like to do that, Mirdad or Michael, please go ahead.
Mirdad, go ahead. I'll pick up after.
Yeah, I think that that we have been sort of coming in this direction of not only a major confrontation, but also a far more devastating confrontation, which President Trump has now promised to begin tonight with direct attacks on the infrastructure. My understanding is that attacks on the infrastructure have already commenced. Bridges have been hit, factories have been hit, and the most recent I can share with our listeners is that a major railway system sort of lines have been disrupted. Also, the Hark Island, which I had the pleasure and honor of visiting at least twice, I think, in very distant past, it has been hit, and my sources tell me that it has been hit nearly 50 times. That's a very small island, and but it is of enormous importance because it is where much of Iranian oil is exported from. Iran's oil, maybe some of our listeners do not know this, Iran does have major ports in the Persian Gulf, but much of its oil is connected to this island, the Hark Island, which is in the Persian Gulf. And much of the shipping which brings Iranian oil from the Persian Gulf actually anchor at Hark. And so it's an enormously important island. There is some rumor in Iran that these massive bombings may be the beginning of U.S. troops landing on the island to take over Iran's oil installations. That is yet to be seen, but it has been serious and significant. Also, I think it needs to be mentioned, and this is an important one, that there has been some diplomatic sort of back and forth between the two sides, and clearly the Iranian leadership has decided to reject the ultimatum from the United States and basically asked last night that young Iranians come and create circles around the power plants. This is asking children to come out, the young people, and create a sort of a shield around these factories so United States would not attack them.
Wow. All right. Well, we do have, shall we take some calls? Let's do that right now. Let's get Rick on. He's on up first. Rick, good morning. You're on with Mirdad and Michael. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, professors. I know when you teach your classes, you have to be sort of non-secular, but I have a question. It's a lot of comments, but questions later on about that non-secularism. After the war started, I did a deep backward dive in into prophecy, and I'm not trying to proselytize here. But I went back and I worked back from Esther to Samuel to the Exodus, and the word Amalekite always comes up. And then I cross over to Jeremiah. Jeremiah prophecy, and I know people go, oh, these are just myths. Well, Jeremiah was, there's scientific proof. He was real. There's scientific proof. Xerxes was real. And these are the two that I'm going to focus on. Jeremiah said that the bow of Elam would be broken, Elam being Persian during biblical times, and that all the kings and his officials will be destroyed. Do you think it's a coincidence that we attacked Iran on the beginning of Purim, Purim being referenced to the book of Esther, and that the back of Elam, do you think this is providential, or do you think it's just a coincidence? A coincidence also that all of the generals were in one room, which doesn't seem to be too intelligent to me. Do you think it was just a coincidence, or do you think there's some providence in my thinking about Purim, about the generals, about the science proving that there were individuals like Xerxes, Jeremiah, Darius, so on and so forth?
All right.
And I'll listen to your call.
Thanks for the call, gentlemen. Any response to what he just said? Your dad or Michael?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm even qualified. It's probably above my pay grade to say whether this is some sort of providence or just coincidence. But I think that there are secular explanations, and I think the example that Rick raises is a real good one. The generals were all in one place and were killed, and you know, what in the world would have possessed them to do that? And I think it's arrogance. It's a sense that, you know, they've been there for 47 years.
They were untouchable.
Nothing's going to happen. Nothing had happened in the past, and I think if you turn it around a little bit, that's exactly why the attacks took place when they did, because the Israelis had that intelligence, and it was an opportune time. So I really can't comment on Rick's more fundamental question, but things like that often have a more pedestrian explanation.
Your thoughts, Mirdad?
Yeah, I think that with regard to the so-called supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, and the 40 generals being in the same place, they anticipated one more meeting with U.S. officials in Vienna, Austria, before the war commenced. And it was during the holy month of Ramadan, and they thought that, well, you know, the United States would not embark on a military campaign against them in a Muslim holy month, which they would respect, you know. There was no reason for United States or Israel to respect that, but they thought they would, and that the negotiations were ongoing. And the way President Trump had sort of stated the last time he had spoken was that we still have one more step, which was a reference to, I think that was the Monday when they were supposed to meet in Vienna, and this happened on Saturday. So they came together, and as Israelis were watching the situation, and the United States as well, they decided that, well, we might as well start the war now, and with a major hit, which will basically decapitate Iran's leadership, at least a good part of it and a very critical part of it.
Yeah, I think it's also important to realize, because Meredith mentioned the negotiations, which I think are very important. The Iranian government has been very good at delaying. Rouhani, who was the lead negotiator for Iran during the what became known as the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal, had earlier negotiated with the Bush administration, and he bragged, you know, we just dragged it out and dragged it out and dragged it out and dragged it out. And I guess there's a certain amount of confidence that they'd be able to do the same again.
Fool me once, shame on you, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Fool me twice, shame on me. I tell you what, gentlemen, we're up against a break. We have all sorts of folks. So the phone lines are lighting up for you, gentlemen, for Global Hotspots, and we deeply appreciate your being here to answer their questions. We're going to come right back after this.
75 years of research.
75 years of policy.
75 years of opportunity.
75 years of freedom.
This is 75 years of the Muscular Dystrophy Association.
Join us at mda75.org.
We are back on Talk Back. Dr. Mirdad Kia, Dr. Michael Mayer, both joining us this morning. And we're talking about global hotspots, specifically what's going on right now in the Middle East. And Catherine is up next with her comment or question. Catherine, good morning.
Good morning. Just a couple of things here. I don't know if you listen to 2CTV, which I do, which is a good resource to find out what's going on in Iran. He's got lots of contacts in Iran. And he's on YouTube, by the way. Also, you know, Trump's rhetoric is that it's targeted to the IRGC, not necessarily to the media and the public. So, you know, keep that in mind when you take a look at what he says. There was a good article on April 5th, 2026 on Fox News' website by Efrat Lotcher, and it's titled Inside Iran's Ruling Ideology, How a Holy Mission and Messianic Doctrine Fuel Regime Extremism. So I was wondering, how much does the apocalyptic nature of the IRGC's version of Islam factor into what's going on, i.e. The hoped for emergence of the 12th Mahdi? Does this indicate that they're not going to actually acquiesce to any sort of
negotiation?
Thank you, negotiations. Until they are completely destroyed. That's basically it.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call, gentlemen. Please.
Thank you.
Yeah. First and foremost, 2CTV, which is actually broadcasted from United Kingdom. He is based in London. It's actually a very, very good choice. The fellow is an Iranian British citizen, and he does a great job in terms of including different points of views, but also share his own. And it's on a digital platform, which means that everyone, including those who are using YouTube, can use it. So that's a great choice. And thank you very much, Catherine, for bringing up 2C. For those who are interested, is T-O-U-S-S-I, 2C. 2C is a city in Iran, and apparently he might be coming, originating from that wonderful ancient city. Whatever the case may be, as far as the messianic ideas, I have to tell you, you know, a lot of people poo-pooed that idea and said, well, they're very realistic and after all, they are running a government and so on and so forth. I actually think that in this country especially, but also in Europe, we have dismissed this as a relevant issue. But I think it's actually a very central and relevant issue in terms of the ideology of this government. There are folks in the top now, especially now, that the upper echelon has been decimated. There are at least two or three of them who have actually written books about the return of the so-called Mahdi, M-A-H-D-I. Mahdi is the name or the title for the coming Messiah or Savior in Shia Islam. And one of them has actually predicted that the return of the Savior will come with an invasion of United States and Israel of Iranian territory, and that he celebrated actually martyrdom as a way of dying when such a moment arrives. It's very interesting. I think some folks maybe do not realize this. In their version of Islam, in Shia Islam, S-H-I-A, Shia Islam, victory is in martyrdom. Victory is not actually scoring victory on the battlefield. In Shia Islam, when you read its history, it's mostly defeats, actually. And mostly the leaders of the sect have died, you know, in battles in which they were basically outmaneuvered. But they're victorious because they stood for a principle and gave their lives. So it's the essence of martyrdom that defines victory rather than actually winning in a war in which the enemy would actually surrender and capitulate.
Yeah, I think that that's an important point. The difficulty in sorting out the motivations, you know, are people driven by ideology, or is ideology simply a justification for what they want to do for other, maybe more practical reasons? And you can have that debate about, say, Stalin and expansionism after World War II. You know, was he driven by Marxist ideology, or was he an expansionist and used Marxism to justify his goals? In this case, Merinat, I think, really hit the nail on the head with his, these are, in fact, true believers. Ahmadinejad made reference to the coming of the 12th Imam, and you know, he said he would be happy to, you know, lose his entire country if he could take out Israel and this kind of thing. When people say stuff like that, it's worth at least listening to and paying attention to. And the religious motivation, I think, for a lot in the secular West is hard to grasp, but it's very, very powerful.
Mirdad, go ahead. We have about 2 minutes. We have to take a break, so go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think, of course, there is a realistic side, which is they wanted to create a hegemonic, a dominant presence in the Middle East, in the Persian Gulf region, and emerge as a superpower. But this is very interesting, not in the name of Iran or Iranian national interest or even Iranian nationalism. It was actually in the name of an Islamic, global Islamic system. They are really the Shia version of ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda and ISIS are the Sunni Orthodox version of global caliphate and global Islamic rule. These folks are the representative of the Shia version of a dominated Shia-dominated, basically, Middle East. The only issue that they have had in some ways is that the Shia Muslims constitute a minority, even in the Middle East region. So their appeal has not been popular, especially in the Arab countries, with the sole exception of Lebanon and Iraq, where these countries actually have a significant Shia population.
We're going to come right back. We have Steve, Helen, and Nancy, and Jeff all waiting to visit with you, gentlemen. Global hotspots underway until 10 o'clock this morning. We're going to come right back, pick it up right after this.
Hi, this is John with Jason.
We are back on Talkback. Global Hotspots continues. We're at our final segment of the first hour. So should we take another call before
sure.
we... Yeah, let people waiting on the line. This is Steve. Steve, good morning. What's your question or comment, please?
Hey, yeah. Hey, Mirdad, you got to be careful what you wish for, right? Hey, quick question. When Trump declares victory tonight, no matter what that looks like, is it going to be better? Are the average everyday people who are trying to feed their family and hug their kids after school and all that stuff, are they going to be better off tomorrow morning? Just curious if, you know, the people, the actual people, not the powerful, not the people that will continue to be there and in power or placed in power, are they going to be better off? Are they going to have the freedoms that we told everyone the people of Afghanistan would have, who are falling out of airplane wells trying to escape? Are they going to be better off like the people in Iraq who had to suffer civil war for, I don't know, 17 years? Are they going to all be better? Are they going to be happier and healthier and have more freedoms? Are women going to be more empowered? Or, you know, all the things that we so value here in the United States, are we going to see the average people have more of in Iran?
Well, Steve, well, thank you for the call.
You know the answer, Steve. Why don't you tell us? Since you know Iran so well, why don't you tell us what you think?
I think he's gone. Yeah. All right. So let's take one more call. We have about 2 minutes left in our time together before the top of the hour. Helena is up next. Or should we wait? Okay. Helena, quickly, what's your question?
Okay. Since the very first day of the war, there has been some question of who is now in charge in Iran, given that Ayatollah Khamenei was killed in that first bombing raid. His son has been named, Mojtaba, has been named the successor, but we never hear anything or see anything from him. And I was wondering if your guests could comment on what they think is going on there. And also, as a side question, how would the lack of an active supreme leader, how does that affect any negotiations the regime enters into? Thank you.
Very good question. So we've got about 3 minutes, Mirdad and Michael.
Yeah. There is a recently released report that tells us that Mr. Mojtaba Khamenei is actually unconscious and receiving treatment for a severe medical condition in the holy city of Qom, 2 hours south of Tehran. And this is according to a diplomatic memo based on U.S. and Israeli intelligence, which the Times of London has reported. And this basically confirms, you know, our assessment, my assessment as well, that an effective military takeover of the country has taken place, and there is no clerical sort of supervision over this military junta or this military council which has taken over. And this Mojtaba Khamenei is 56 years old, was installed as supreme leader after the death of his father Ali Khamenei in the opening U.S.-Israeli strikes on February 28th. And he has not made a single public appearance since taking office. The Iranian claim, the governmental claim, was that he sustained only a minor leg injury in the strike that killed his father, mother, and other family members. But it's very clear that he actually sustained severe wounds or shock to his system. And he is in a hospital and very much alive, but non-functional.
So basically, he's incapacitated at this time. Is that correct?
Completely.
Okay.
And you have to realize that command and control structures have been devastated. It's not just decapitation in the sense that the first layer of leadership was wiped out, but the layer below them, too. And so it's not clear exactly how much control the people. You can sit down with the leader of the parliament or somebody else and try to work out a deal. It's not clear how much they control a colonel in the Revolutionary Guard who has access or control over a missile silo. I mean, it makes it a very difficult situation.
Well, it's got to be very difficult for the United States to be watching all this and wondering, you know, what's our next move? Do we have to wait for them or do we have to be proactive? Got about a minute.
Well, I think it is. And I think the one thing that is pretty clear is that any government imposed by the United States would not be popular and would be a bad idea. And so to a certain extent, this is going to have to resolve itself one way or the other. But again, as we've mentioned on a number of occasions, it's not so easy. This is a regime that has infiltrated every layer of government, you know, from the supreme leader down to the guy who delivers mail. And so getting them out is not an easy matter.
We have another hour of global hotspots to come. We hope you'll stay with us. Amir Dad and Michael, thank you for being with us. We'll be right back after.
This is TalkBack, 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309.
This is News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. KGVO, Missoula's news and weather station.
Welcome back to TalkBack. TalkBack this morning is brought to you by Gomer's Diesel, diesel repair parts and service in Missoula. Call 728-7620 for Gomer's. Pivots Plus is Montana's leader in irrigation parts, service, and sales. Call Pivots Plus, 683-4418. Busy Bees Cleaning Service, commercial cleaning you can trust. Call Busy Bees at 550-3219 and get a free estimate. Bruckner's Truck and Equipment, heavy-duty truck sales, parts and service. Call Bruckner's, 541-9097. Quality Seamless Gutters, expert gutter installation and repair. For a free quote, call Quality Seamless Gutters, 728-4002. And Y West Storage, secure flexible storage in Missoula. Call Y West, 510-0590, so you can reserve your unit today.
The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
We are back on TalkBack. Peter Christian here, Mr. Nick Christensen producing TalkBack, taking your phone calls. It's global hotspots, ladies and gentlemen, and we've been going great guns. I shouldn't say that. We've been going full speed, let's put it this way, for the first hour. We have another hour to go. Dr. Michael Mayer here in the studio, Professor Mirdad Kia, University of Montana History Professor, joining us on the phone. So, gentlemen, let's take it away from here. We have folks waiting on the phone. Let's do that. Nancy, you've been holding the longest. Thanks for holding. Please go ahead.
Yes, and Dr. Mirdad Kia, my compassion and thoughts are with you, especially with you at this time. And thank you both for coming on the show today, because we really needed to hear some truth, because there seems to be a mist of deception and cloudiness, you know, around what we're being told, what's going on in Iran, and it's not good for anything. But I just want to say that Dr. Mirdad Kia, what you told us just before Easter on this show is all coming true. I never had doubts about what you told us anyway. And do you believe that the Iranian people were allow their children to be used as human shields by Khomeini regime, you know, regarding the infrastructure and the power plants? They didn't help us. They didn't help the regime out when it came to our pilot, downed pilot, when they offered a reward. And my other question is, since they have no internet, does this mean that they're not talking to the sleeper cells or communicating with the sleeper cells here within the interior of the United States of America? That's something that I'm really worried about, too. And God bless you, and thank you so much, and I'll listen off air.
Thank you, Nancy. Gentlemen, please, go ahead.
Nancy, thank you very much. I truly appreciate your kind words and prayers, and we need to stand together in this time of great crisis and great human tragedy. Let me answer how much I know about this so-called sleeper cells. They are at all times, it doesn't matter whether they're under attack or in a war, or if it's actually a more sort of peaceful setting, their cells and their supporters are always active at all times. We just had, I'm not sure if you saw it, this is very recent, maybe some of our listeners do not know, but we had a major attack by gunmen in Istanbul, Turkey. And the attack targeted the Israeli Consul General building in Istanbul. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, three individuals were killed. Among the wounded, I know, were members of the Turkish police who defended the building. So there is no doubt in my mind that these are connected to the regime in Tehran. They have sales all over the Middle East. They have supporters, especially proxies in Iraq, Lebanon, Yemen. So they have all been activated. And by the way, since you asked this excellent question, you know why this regime is collapsing right now? It's because they just imported armed militias from Iraq and Afghanistan. They have run out of people who are reporting to work. The other thing that I really want to make sure we understand is also the fact that though internet is down, they have a special cards and internet service for their own agents and for their own security and military forces. And for that reason, internet is cut off for the average Iranian, but it's not cut off for the members of the regime, especially those in the security and the military apparatus.
Now, is that called Starlink, or is that something different? That's
something different. And at an earlier point, when there were the mass demonstrations, and they cut off the government cut off the internet, Elon Musk made Starlink available to to the protesters to enable communications.
Yeah, the Starlink has really helped the folks on the ground in Iran. About 25,000, according to some sources, and 50,000, according to some other sources. But that actually helped us to receive more images of the protests in Iran, because the image they want to actually portray to the outside world is that the Iranian people are rallying around the government and they are becoming patriotic. You know, and I know we had a caller who basically said that, you know, this is our fault and so on and so on. You know, this is the regime that has done, and I, you know, we can go over this list each and every time and list their atrocities against the people of Iran, only killing 45,000 people on January 8th and 9th, and then going through emergency rooms in hospitals and shooting the wounded in the head and warning the nurses and doctors that if you treat the wounded, you're going to be assaulted and jailed in front of the, you know, the medical staff. They actually took two nurses who were insisting on helping the patients and assaulted and apparently raped them. You know, if Steve thinks that's normal life, great. We are returning to normal life by keeping this regime in power and allowing it to basically unleash massive terror against its population.
We're going to come right back. Stay with us. We'd love to have your phone calls. This is Global Hotspots. Dr. Professor Mehrdad Kia and Dr. Michael Mayer joining us here in the studio this morning. And we have Jeff and Harry both waiting. We'll get to your calls when we return right after this.
Cold and flu season.
Dennis Bragg with your updated Town Square weather. Mostly sunny Tuesday, a high near 60. It will be breezy as we have a cold front pushing through with west winds up to about 25 miles per hour. You could see some gusts up to about 35 in the valleys, as high as 40 to 50 miles per hour on some of the ridge lines. Mostly clear on Tuesday night with lows dipping down to freezing as those west winds ease up after midnight. Wednesday looks bright and sunny with a high near 60. Then a sunny stretch, 62 Thursday, warming up to 69 by Friday.
We are back on Talk Back. It's Global Hotspots. Professor Mehrdad Kia joining us on the phone. Dr. Michael Mayer joining us here in the studio this morning. And folks have been waiting on the phone. Let's get Jeff on first. Jeff, thank you for holding. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning, Michael. Good morning, Mehrdad. Mehrdad, I can hear in your voice how heavy this weighs on your heart. And I just feel nothing but compassion for you. I can't imagine what it's like seeing this happen to your home country. This past weekend, I listen daily to a podcast called The Presidential Daily Brief. And every weekend, he does what he calls a situation report, Mike Baker does. And this past weekend, he had a guy named Benem-Ben Talablu, who is a senior director for the Iran program in the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. So he I don't know if you're familiar with him or not.
Very well, yes.
Okay. And he talked, toward the end of the podcast, he talked about a Tehran professor, Saad El-Zabakilam, and he was talking about how hard it must be for those. And I guess Professor Alam said that if American and Israel really go to war against you guys, even a lamppost won't be standing. And then Benham was trying to talk about what was a tolerance for conflict. And Professor Alam said, was a lamppost even working? And the whole thrust of this was that you have a population. His point was you have a population in Iran who is so fed up that they are pro-conflict. They're willing to go through almost anything to get rid of these dictators. And earlier you said that confirmed 45,000 people killed in 2 days. That's almost as many as we lost in Vietnam throughout the whole time. And in 2 days, the current regime killed 45,000. How, you know, we have done things on our side that do damage, but I think it pales in comparison to what the regime's doing. And so what is the tempo of the people there? You know, they've suffered droughts and water shortages and electricity outages and food shortages and all sorts of things. Is it worth it for them, do you think? Is that your take?
I think that 47 years of living in a prison camp, that's what Iran has been. And living through a violent dictatorship which has jailed, raped, executed tens of thousands of Iranians, and I'm not even including the 45,000, Jeff, that you mentioned, and the environmental disaster they have brought, the trillions of dollars they have actually taken out of the economy, and instead of building any infrastructure for their own people, for the people of Iran, spending it on Hezbollah, spending it on Hamas, spending it on Houthis, spending it on building ballistic missile system, spending on nuclear capability. That is, the entire wealth of the Iranian people has been drained for a militarized fascistic regime to sort of create more havoc and trouble. For what? For a day when they have total hegemony in the region. Do you think any people who have gone through this trauma, you remember 3 years ago, a Kurdish woman is actually thrown in the back of a truck so badly that she dies from a head injury. The entire nation rose. Goes back to 2009. Millions of Iranians came to the streets and they just massacred them. Just in January again. You know, who would in his or her mind think that the people of Iran would return to that as a normal state of affairs? That's the question I think all of us should answer. If that is the normal state of affairs, which for them it has been, I think they are willing to go through any suffering, but not to have that kind of regime ruling them again. And this is not to support war or violence. It's to just say the mood of the Iranian people is enough. We are human beings. If United States and the British had to land troops and liberate France from the Nazis, if United States and British troops had to march all the way to Germany and liberate the German people from Hitler, if they had to do the same thing with Mussolini in Italy, maybe this is our one chance to also get our freedom from these fascists who have been ruling us and destroying our society for the last 47 years.
Very powerfully said. We're going to come
Thank you for putting that so clearly and forcefully. I appreciate it. I agree with you. And again, I have nothing but compassion for you and the people suffering through this. So thanks.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Very powerfully said. We're going to come right back. We have Harry and Dave both standing by, and several other phone lines are open if you have a question or a comment for Dr. Michael Mayer and Professor Mirdad Kia on Global Hotspots. We'll be back right after this.
Montana State News Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. The man who could take over leadership at the University of Montana says he's ready to meet the challenges of higher education in the 2020s. Dr. Jeremiah Sheehan is visiting the Missoula campus this week, meeting with staff, students, and university supporters. He says he recognizes the challenges facing colleges, including the cost of higher education, but he's looking forward to working with UM administrators and faculty to find solutions.
The University of Montana has a number of students that come here with different experiences and different needs, and so understanding what those are fully and being sure that we have designed processes, systems, and a culture intentionally to support them will be job number one.
Dr. Sheehan first visited the UM campus last year while working as a consultant. He would replace President Seth Bodner, the former president, who left the university to run for the U.S. Senate. Sheehan is currently the interim president at Boise State. It's going to be another big day for winds in parts of the state. The National Weather Service in Great Falls forecasting gusts of 50 to 60 miles per hour for Great Falls, Helena, Bozeman, Dillon, Ennis, and other locations, with peak gusts hitting through midday and into the afternoon. Winds in Cutbank and Browning may hit 70 miles per hour. West of the divide, it's likely gusts will hit 35 miles per hour in the valleys, but in the passes and higher elevations, it could blow closer to 60 from a passing cold front. The man who was detained following that dramatic report of a shootout and truck fire in central Montana has been released as authorities continue to try and piece together exactly what happened early Sunday. 911 operators had received a call from a semi driver who said his rig was being shot at. Deputies from Fergus and two other counties responded. They found the truck burning and locked in the middle of Highway 191 near Judith Gap. The person of interest was arrested at gunpoint a short while away, but there are still questions. Undersheriff Corey Smith tells the Lewistown News Argus there's been no confirmation shots were fired, with much of the evidence destroyed in that blaze. This is the Montana State News Network.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Elena had another asthma attack. She's really sad to miss school again.
Asthma can be triggered by allergens from common pests.
I just can't shake this fever.
Mosquito bites can cause West Nile and Zika virus infections.
Sorry, boss. I'm going to be out of work for a while.
The CDC estimates that more than 300,000 Lyme disease cases spread by ticks occur in the U.S. each year. Don't let pests force you to take a sick day. Learn how to protect your family at pestworld.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association and the CDC.
Hey, we're back on TalkBack. 721-1290 is our number. Global Hotspots rolling right along with Michael Mayer and Mirdad Kia. And Harry has been waiting quite a while on the phone, so let's get him on. Harry, thanks for your patience. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Jeff asked one question I was going to ask, so thank you for that answer. But I have a couple comments and another question. Comments, first of all, is that, you know, the old saying is that the first casualty of a war is the truth, and that's usually on both sides. But this, as for negotiating, you know, honorably, obviously Iran doesn't do it, but then apparently we don't do it either, because two times we negotiated with them, we attacked them right in the middle of negotiation, so that doesn't bode well for any further negotiations. But my question is, do you believe that universities or professors, even if they're professors of, like, nuclear physics, are they rightful targets in this war?
Mirdad, your thoughts.
Harry, you're asking me, I assume. Is that correct?
Yeah, either or. Yeah.
Mike, you want to start, and then I'll jump in.
You know, the question of what is a legitimate target in war is one that's kicked around all the time. When actual combat takes place, the theoretical aspects tend to go out the window. We tried to get at the Nazi scientists and so on during World War II, I don't hear much complaint about that. It's again, when we're talking about university professors, you're talking about nuclear scientists, people who are deeply engaged in creating a nuclear weapon for the Iranian state. And so it becomes, again, are they combatants or not? I think the decision, certainly the Israelis regard them as such. They're a threat to their national interests and their national existence.
Are these scientists under threat from their own government to get the work done or else?
I would imagine so. Merida, I can probably speak better to that.
Yeah, so Harry is actually asking an excellent question. And so what they have done, this is how much I know. So if it's limited, I apologize. But I know that in principle, I oppose any attack on hospitals, on charitable foundations, on, of course, universities, cultural centers. It's an obvious answer. The problem is the following. I know this because a very close person to me, who is a doctor and still lives in Iran, he and another person have told me that since the attacks, and they realized the main targets are, of course, Revolutionary Guards headquarters, barracks, military sort of installations, that they actually evacuated a number of large hospital complexes, and they moved the Revolutionary Guards units, or at least the more elite command and control units, into the hospitals. So they evacuated emergency rooms, they evacuated the basements of hospitals, which in the case of Iran were mostly used for x-rays, for labs and so on and so forth, in order to protect their elite units. The same thing happened by the Revolutionary Guards also moving into elementary schools, kindergartens, the buildings which were designated. And what is amazing is that for the first week or two, they actually kept these schools open in order to use them as shield to protect their fighters, their officers. I do not know, and I'll be very honest about this, I do not know the Sharif University, that's the Sharif University that Harry is referring to, which was attacked. Sharif University, I know, is an industrial technological school, is the elite school, and they attacked much of its lab and research institutions, which are very, very well funded by the government. Did they know some research was being conducted there which had dual use? And this is what they have used. They have used it for academic purposes, but also for military purposes. So, you know, if they attacked it, they may have, and I'm just saying may have, discovered that there were dual use for these from these labs, and much of it was to help the Revolutionary Guards.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Let's get another call on. This is Dave. Dave, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, first of all, about hospitals, if you don't have any electricity going to the hospital, it is almost useless. A lot of the people require surgeries, and the babies being born. So you're going to see a lot of deaths in the hospitals without electricity. But Israel, at this very moment in time, is attacking infrastructures, railroads, and what have you, as we speak. But, you know, as a historian, I believe in a guerrilla war style. I think guerrilla war helped Israel as the Jews kicked the British out of Israel. I believe guerrilla war beat us in Vietnam. And I believe guerrilla war was important in Europe when Hitler controlled all of Europe. We had a guerrilla war going on inside Europe when we fed them weapons and what have you. And I believe that Trump made a big mistake when he first came into the office. And he had the chance, when he looked at the negotiation, the renegotiating the nuclear arms deal, and he didn't like it. Rather than walk away from it, he should have kept on negotiating. And at the same time, he should have started training people within Iran for a nuclear, for a guerrilla war. And he missed that opportunity to help the people of Iran rise up on their own with only military help. So that's my view on history.
All right, gentlemen, your thoughts.
There are a couple of things that when you're talking about history, guerrilla warfare did not end the Nazi occupation in Europe. A massive invasion did. And another year's fighting with millions of men at arms did. This idea, the analogies, just don't work. And it's not only Trump who had opportunities. Obama, just out of hand, almost dismissed the green movement, the green revolution in Iran that Mehrdad referred to earlier, because he was trying to reach, eventually became the JCPOA with the regime. And he also had visions of, reorienting American policy in the Middle East. So that's one thing. The other thing about attacking infrastructure and targets. The Iranian government is attacking infrastructure and civilian targets in Israel and in Arab nations, Gulf nation, the Gulf Arab nations, the Sunni nations, all throughout the region. The outrage only goes one way. It's very curious. I mean, they're deliberately targeting civilian infrastructure. They're deliberately targeting oil infrastructure in the Gulf nations. And I think, you know, some sort of semblance of reality needs to come into this conversation.
I think that Dave is correct in this sense that as we are watching this war unfold, I think the Iranian regime is actually going what Dave mentioned, that is, they are dispersing. They're giving full authority to various commanders of various Revolutionary Guards units, and of course, besiege units, which are basically the shock troopers on the streets, to actually act in accordance with their own sort of decisions at any moment. I think we might have the possibility of this sort of response from Revolutionary Guards turning into some form of guerrilla units, you know, basically fighting back, but not in a concentrated and organized fashion. In that case, it would be basically up to the people on the ground and the United States and Israel to respond. But I do agree that the possibility with Mike, that possibility of this sort of guerrilla tactic might be very unsuccessful in the end, because they just don't have the muscle and they do not have the numbers anymore.
We're going to come right back after we take a break. We have Skip and Mark both waiting online to visit with you gentlemen. This is Global Hotspots, in case you just joined us, specifically talking about what's going on in Iran right now, in the Middle East. 721-1290 is our number. We'll be right back.
Anyone can choose to make a difference. You can help people succeed, rebuild after disasters, protect the environment, or feed the hungry. Not only will you make a difference for others, but for yourself. You can earn money for college, learn career skills, and make friendships that last a lifetime. Make a difference. Choose your future. Choose AmeriCorps.
We are back on Global Hotspots. I'm Peter Christian. Nick Christensen taking your phone calls this morning here in the studio. Michael Mayer on the phone is Professor Mehrdad Kia, and folks have been waiting to get their calls answered. So let's get Skip on the line. Skip, thanks for holding. Go ahead, please.
And thank you, Peter. And thank you both for coming on today. This program like this gives us a better understanding, a better full spectrum ideas of exactly what's going on. I wish that, like I said before, I wish this could be broadcast all over the country so people have access to this kind of all the ideas that we need to get through this. We're only 90 days or less from the 250th anniversary of our country. So with all of these things, that this is a broad kind of a thought, Dr. Mirdad and Dr. Mears, do you think that in less than 90 days, we can have some kind of a direction that isn't so every single day a brand new crisis, a brand new possible problem that we didn't know about yesterday could come to some sort of a solution or some sort of an end game or an exit strategy that we can all feel better about this all transpiring? But I wanted to bring up one thing. There's other parts of the globe, this is hotspots day, that are suffering badly because of this also. For instance, the Philippines and Japan are coming up on a serious problem with supplies, and they have gotten together for a security team for both the Japanese and Philippine area in the South China Sea, because they know that for instance, China could be bothering them in a bad way, because the United States has its eye on the ball over in Iran and still in Gaza. So meanwhile, do you see anything happening that's going to get us to a closure? And I just thought I'd ask that in a general way.
All right.
So thank you for coming on today.
Thanks for the call, gentlemen.
It's a good question, and it's a very good point. The only thing I would say, and I don't know that this offers much comfort to Skip, but the notion that there's a crisis everywhere in the world is not unusual. People tend to look back and see the 50s as calm and tranquil. And
the Red Scare.
Yeah, well, but internationally, even.
Yeah, yeah.
If you look at the daily agenda in of the Eisenhower administration, you look at the discussions and the cabinet meetings and so on, there's a crisis every day somewhere. Kamoyamatsu, two islands between Taiwan and mainland China that most people have never heard of today, were the cause of two major international crises. There were things happening in Eastern Europe, in Latin America. There's something happening every day. And we tend to forget that, and people think of that as a tranquil period, but partly it was handled with, I think, a surer hand on the tiller, but we tend to think that we live in uniquely troubled times, and we do live in very troubled times, but it's not unusual that there are crises all over the world, and it's one of the penalties of being a superpower, is that these things involve the United States and affect the United States. And Skip's absolutely right, they affect other countries as well, and including allies that you need to take their interests into consideration.
Yeah, so there are a few things that, I can respond to Skip's excellent question. First, I think this war, one way or another, will wind down in the next few weeks. That's my strong feeling. For several reasons, it has been going on for over a month now. On all sides, you have to take a little bit of time to, even if you want to continue it, to refuel your war machine, and for that reason alone. But also, remember that November election is coming up. This is a president and a White House which is very aware that the longer the United States stays in this state of conflict, it will damage the ruling party, the Republicans. It is also very important to note, though it is not a political event, the World Soccer Cup, the Soccer World Cup is coming to United States. Irony of all ironies, Iran has qualified, and it's supposed to play the first two games in Los Angeles and the third game in Seattle. Both cities have large expatriate communities of Iranians.
Wow.
And Iran is basically wavering between coming and going through the messy situation of not showing spectators booing and hooting the regime and its representatives, and showing it to the national audience in Iran, or actually boycotting it. They have already mentioned the possibility of boycotting it, though they continue to practice. They just played Costa Rica in a 5-0 victory. But they played Costa Rica not in Iran. They played Costa Rica in Turkey, which tells you that it's not even safe to play soccer in Iran. So all this to say that this war will wind down, but I don't think this is the end of conflict. President Trump has talked about Cuba. That seems to be on the agenda, especially you have a Secretary of State and National Security Advisor who has very strong personal and historical ties to the island country. And on, so I think we will continue to see this sort of situation with conflict. And last but not least, I think this whole issue of United States relationship with the NATO countries,
yeah,
especially the British and the French and the Germans, is another issue.
We're going to come right back, and phone lines are filling up. We have Mark, Andy, and Emmett all standing by to visit with you gentlemen for Global Hotspots, which will continue right after this.
If you're a local...
Welcome back to Talk Back, and it's Global Hotspots continuing here this morning, the last few sessions, a few segments here. We've got Mark waiting on the line. Mark, good morning. What's your question for Michael and Mirdad?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for being there here. You know, this all kind of started on the October 7th invasion by Hamas into Israel, and Israel's determination to pound Hamas and their allies to dust. And it has expanded from there. Iran is the leader of all of that. They supply Hamas, they supply the Houthis, they supply Hezbollah. I think ultimately that was a total miscalculation by Iran, because I think it's paving the way for the other Gulf states to be part of the Abraham Accords. And as far as the bombing campaign in Iran, you know, my philosophy on that has evolved quite a bit. I think now that I see that we're really willing to take it to the final end and to crush them as much as we can from the air, I'm for that. I think negotiating with Iran over the years has been like trying to go to the Vatican and negotiate a change in their abortion policy. It's just not going to happen. You know, as long as we follow this through to the end in the next few weeks, I think it's good for the West. I think it's good for the rest of the Middle East. Whether it's good for Iran is still to be determined. And I think only people on the ground in Iran, the Iranian people, are going to be able to bring themselves back from this. At least the government won't have the money and the means to support the proxies in the area. I'm wondering, you know, how do you see this ending with, you know, assuming the bombing campaign is successful, we stop, how do you see this ending? How do you see the Strait of Hormuz getting opened? How do you see the Iranian people beginning to be free again?
All right, lots
Thank
of good
for being here, guys.
Thanks for the good questions. Gentlemen, please. Mirdad.
I think that the Strait of Hormuz is one of the top priorities, not of only United States, but also the countries in the neighborhood, the Arab countries, the south of the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Oman, and also the West, which relies on energy, the export of petroleum gas from the region, but also for China, Japan, South Korea, Australia, New Zealand. You know, these are countries which rely on petroleum from the Persian Gulf region. And I think there was a hope in the White House that they might rally to the United States. But the British and the French in particular, but now the Germans have more or less turn their backs to the idea of becoming involved. And I think Japan, though it showed a sort of willingness to somehow join in a military effort to open the strait, it's not doing that anymore. So it's going to be left more or less to the United States and Israel and the Persian Gulf countries, Saudis, Bahrain, Kuwait, UAE, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, and so on and so forth, to take the matter into their own hands. Whether they can, I do not know. I think in the end, it's going to be basically United States again going in and trying to open the strait. It is an essential waterway, and we cannot allow this regime to actually close it. It is not only destructive for the world economy, it's also destructive of the economic situation around the globe. Now, as far as the end game in Iran, there are several scenarios that have been discussed. Of course, the best scenario, I think, is for the regime to collapse. There are indications of that collapse, but there is also an indication that what is left of it, the elite Revolutionary Guards, are actually hardening their position because they don't have any place to go. But, Mark, you are absolutely correct that in the end, what has been degraded significantly is their ability to help their mercenaries and their allies in the region, such as Hezbollah and Hamas and Houthis. But this is the kind of phenomena you have. It's an octopus. You cut off a couple of tentacles, and it somehow finds sufficient amount of money and arms to once again return and rearm its mercenaries. So I wouldn't put it past them to survive this and once again return. And that's why it's essential eventually for the boots on the ground, namely the people of Iran, to take the matter into their own hands.
We're going to take a one-minute break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up with Global Hotspots. Andy Emmett and Rick are all waiting to visit with you, gentlemen. We're going to come right back after this one-minute timeout. Hey, if you're waking up, welcome back to Talk Back, our final segment here, Global Hotspots, rolling right along. And joining us on the phone, Dr. Mirdad Kia and Professor Michael Mayer joining us here in the studio this morning, Professor Emeritus at UM. Andy has been waiting the longest. Andy, good morning. You're on. What's your question, please?
I have two questions. Number one is, if President Trump does what he says he's going to do and gets rid of quite a few of the power plants, explain to the audience what's going to happen to the water plants in Iran. And then I would imagine that Iran would also hit the water plants and the power plants in the Gulf, which would be, in my opinion, a disaster. And then my second question is, and you don't hear about this much, is the Ayatollah that we killed had two fatwas against having a nuclear weapon. Those are my two questions, and you haven't figured it out by now. I'm totally against this war. This is Israel's war, and it's happened in Iraq, and it happened in Syria, and it's a disaster. But thank you very much for taking my call.
You bet. Thanks for the call. Gentlemen, your comments.
Mike,
a couple of things. First, Iran has already launched attacks on infrastructure in neighboring countries, so that's an obvious. It's not something that's going to be new. Let me put it that way. Secondly, Iran has been obviously trying to develop a nuclear weapon. It is this one stumbling block to negotiations. They're not going to give that up. And the idea that this is Israel's war is, I'm sorry, it's foolishness, especially the idea of Iraq. Israel spent a lot of time trying to convince George W. Bush not to attack Iraq. They thought the bigger threat was Iran. And to say that Israel is responsible for that is it just fits into this chorus of stuff that blames Israel for everything, or Israel and the Jews for everything. And it's an unsavory trend that has been revived in recent years, and I think it's very unfortunate.
Mirdad.
Yeah, I think, you know, Mike is absolutely correct that Iran has basically hit power plants, water processing, you know, installations. You know, Kuwait, for example, has to have a water processing plant. And that was one of the first targets of Iran when they attacked Kuwait. By the way, it's very interesting. I don't think some of our listeners might not know that Iranian strikes on United Arab Emirates has been several times more than the attacks on Israel. And the majority of these attacks on United Arab Emirates, which was supposedly a friendly country to the regime in Tehran, has been on civilian installations and infrastructure, airports, factories, and so on and so forth.
All right, let's get another call in. But we have Emmett standing by. Emmett, good morning. You're on Talkback with Michael and Mirdad. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Very important. This is what I wanted to call about because, you know, Donald Trump has said something interesting that I don't remember any president ever saying. It was on CNN. I just woke up about, an hour ago, and basically it was, if a deal isn't reached, an entire civilization will die tonight, never to return. We'll blow them to kingdom come. Everything will blow up. Everything.
All right. Well, we lost Emmett. So, gentlemen, yeah, your thoughts, please.
I'm not sure where he was going with that.
Yeah, me neither. Well, yeah. Oh. Yeah, we're running out of time. We have 3 minutes left. So, gentlemen, let's wrap up.
One of the first things that we need to do is remind listeners that the next book, which is April 20th,
the KGVO Book Club, right,
will be Timothy Naftali, Naftali, and the book is George H.W. Bush. It's a short and very readable biography, and is published by Times Books.
Good. All right. So, Mirdad, any final thoughts from you, sir?
No, I want to thank you and Nick for hosting this wonderful program. I really appreciate all the calls, all the comments, and the wonderful participation and comments of my friend and colleague, Professor Mayer.
Well, it's always a pleasure having you both, and we look forward to our next visit together.
We'll see you on the 20th.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Okay, Mr. Nick, as we look forward to what's coming up on Wednesday's fabulous Talkback show, sir.
We will have the first 15 minutes or so be open phones, and then Governor Greg Gianforte will join us for a half hour, and then after that, it'll be Walt Caro, our resident CPA.
All right, lots of good stuff coming up, ladies and gentlemen. And again, it'll be good to check in with Governor Gianforte once again. He'll be on from 8:15 to 8:45 tomorrow, so a good half hour of questions and answers with our governor.
We have 2 minutes left still, Mike, so if you want to talk a little bit more about the upcoming book, because I don't know if you knew you had more time to do that.
We have plenty of time. Go right ahead.
That's true. Really, Naftali is a journalist, and he's trained in history. He's he worked. I can't remember if he was director. I think he might have been director of the Nixon Library at one point. And he writes well for a popular audience, and is a good choice in that. And he challenges some of the assumptions that a lot of people had about George H.W. Bush. And I think most people on the left and the right regarded him as a failure when he left office. As years have gone by, some things look better. Other decisions of the administration may not look as good as they did at the time.
So, what in your view, what was the one big thing that stands out against his term as president?
Well, I guess from his perspective, he didn't win re-election.
Right.
But, I think a number of Republicans regarded him as kind of a traitor for going back on his promise, no new taxes.
Right. Read my lips. Right?
Yeah, read my lips. Some people have criticized him for not going all the way to Baghdad at the end of the Gulf War. Other people at the time certainly praised him for it. I think one of the areas that'll be interesting to discuss, because this is an area where people thought that George H.W. Bush was completely uninterested, but his record in domestic policy is an interesting one, in some ways better than we remember.
All right, that'll be coming up in our next visit, and we appreciate both you gentlemen being with us today. And thanks to everybody for calling in this morning. We appreciate it. It's been a great day, and we hope that you will join us again tomorrow for another edition of Talk Back. And again, tomorrow we have Governor Gianforte and Walt Kiro. It's going to be a great combination, ladies and gentlemen. Walt is our resident CPA, and, of course, the governor will be answering questions from you as well.
He's our resident governor.
That's right. How about that? Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 8.